Welcome to the Crowdfunding Academy podcast, Board Game Edition. My name is George, and with me is Fran, our head of games. I used to work at Kickstarter, and after leaving Kickstarter, I started working as a crowdfunding consultant, helping creators raise over $20 million. In this podcast, you'll find all the tips, tricks, and methodologies that we apply to help creators raise groundbreaking campaigns. And you'll even hear from the creators themselves on how they do it. On today's podcast, we have an exciting guest, and I can't wait to introduce him to you. So please enjoy the podcast. Welcome to the podcast. We have an incredible guest tonight. His name is Parrish Danforth, and he's going to talk about his new game studio and his upcoming game, specifically related to how he's working with licensing. He is incredibly smart in getting licensing for his game. So we're going to find out what that means, how he manages everything, and how he's prepping for his crowdfunding campaign. But before we get into the game, Parrish, would you mind giving yourself a short introduction? And then I would love to know how on earth you speak Japanese, Korean, and Spanish in addition to English.
Sure. I'm Parrish, and I started playing games with my nephews about 12 years ago when they were really little. And I loved Dungeons and Dragons at the time, but it was a little too complicated because they were just 2 years old and 5 years old. So I, at the time, couldn't find a system that was made for young children. And so I took some of my background working in teaching English as a second language, which is why I was living in Japan and South Korea and Mexico, and have a master's degree in training. And so I took some of that training knowledge and helped use that onboarding and skill building design strategy to create a RPG that builds in complexity rather than uses subtractive design. And I played it with them for a number of years, and then I started playing it with adults, and they were like, this is good enough to publish. And so I published a digital version a couple years ago, and it's had over 1,000 downloads. And wow. On RPG now, or drive-through RPG. And so we're getting ready to do a physical version, because what people told me so much is I do love RPGs, but since I'm not a dungeon master, I don't have all of that stuff. And so I'm trying to put together a box version that gives you the maps and the miniatures and everything with it.
Amazing. Thank you so much for that introduction. It sounds super compelling. Could you give a short description of what the game itself is actually about? It's Alterra Age of Exploration, right?
Right. Yeah.
So what's the basic premise?
Definitely, I would start with it's a gateway RPG. I, as I said, designed it in order to teach my nephews how to role play. And the goal is a game that teaches you the fundamentals of modern role-playing games.
Awesome. With that, I'm going to move over to Fran, who's our resident games expert, who's going to probe you on all your interesting licensing techniques, which we have never come across before. So, Fran, take it away.
All right. So, Paris, the first question on top of my mind is, if budget wasn't an issue, would you still license your game's artwork? Or if you had someone in the team that was able to do it?
I use a couple different licenses, my different artists. They go all the way from David Ravoy is my main artist, and he produces a French language webcomic that is available via Creative Commons. So his license is completely open and anyone can use it. And I have been a supporter of his Patreon for the last 5 years. But aside from that, I don't pay him anything directly. Now, supporting him for 5 years is still several hundred dollars, but I don't have a formal contract in place because it uses the Creative Commons license. And I've talked to him and worked with him and agreed with him on how I'm going to use his work. But he does not do any kind of custom work for me or anyone else. Second, I work with an artist, Christopher Love, who does all of my weapons and items. And I approached him directly and wrote a custom licensing contract because he had never worked for anything besides. And three, I worked with Sorrow Scavenger, and I found his work on DriveThruRPG, and I licensed it according to the license that was already existing on DriveThruRPG. And I've reached out to him and have not heard back. So all the way from like very close contact where I totally worked with the artist to develop the contract to the artist has never responded to me, but I have a fully in place contract. So there's quite a bit of variability in the types of licensing that I've done. Oh, there is one more, and it's a sort of reciprocal license. So I work with Matt Holmberg also, and he produced a huge, awesome library of line work. And I have an agreement with him that if I color it and then like license it back to him, that I'm totally welcome to use it.
That's awesome.
So
that's really great.
Yeah. So he hates coloring because it's not as creative as drawing. And to him, it seemed like the work half of the drawing bit. But I'm a colorist. And so I really have a much easier time coloring and using coloring in Photoshop than doing line work. So it's just an art trade. And wow. He uses it in his scenes. And I use the work in for the miniatures in Age of Exploration.
Amazing. And so can I just summarize this part by sort of tell me if this is correct or not. You built an entire game that aside from the coloring, you didn't design, you didn't have designers on your team graphically. You just found elements everywhere from folks that you collaborated with or just found licenses and put it together. Is that correct?
That's pretty correct. I would say I'm the graphic designer for this.
Yeah.
So sometimes it does involve me modifying the pieces in order to fit better with the plan. And that has to be in the licenses too. You have to make sure that your licenses allow edits and adaptations. So can I jump back to Francisco's question?
Sure.
Absolutely.
Thing.
So to answer your question, I probably wouldn't. If I had unlimited money, I would probably go ahead and just commission it with an artist that I already liked. However, here's the caveat. Personally, I design really well by starting with the art. And in this process, I have so many times found myself inspired by the art and then designed to it rather than trying to find art for the vision in my head. One really great example is I had an idea for a spell that maybe like froze an enemy in place. Like I imagined them like frozen in a block of ice. And I went through looking for art that would fit that. And I knew it had to be ice because it's within that like spell school. And so eventually I was just like going, I couldn't find anything that resembled that. And I thought about like doing overlays in Photoshop to like create it myself. And it looked really terrible. And so I just looked through all of the snow related art that the webcomic had available. And I found a picture of them like creating a snowman, but it was like a snow goblin. And so like suddenly it like triggered on, oh, I could have this be like, instead of being encased in a block of ice, the spell is that you turn the enemy into a snowman. And so I renamed the spell from whatever it was, deep freeze or something, to snow manifestation. So suddenly it's so much more evocative. It's so much more like within the theme of the world, and it's utilizing art that was created by the artist. Like, so it's much more inspired by them. I think that giving your artists liberty to draw whatever they want, like allows them to play more. And so since all of these artists are like creative first, and then I'm creating to their work, I think we have really more interesting designs than if I had just like pulled stock designs or if I had just like come up with my own ideas.
Okay. And on that topic, so was this the only circumstance that you had to change one of your initial concepts or ideas because you found something that it fit better?
No, I would say that happened quite commonly. And there were times when I had to change it drastically. Like even jumping spell schools or changing the way that the ability worked to fit an art. But there's also times when I had an amazing piece of art and knew I wanted to use it, but like didn't have any design that fit it at the moment. So then I had to like, one of them is a really cool, like piratey, piece of piratey garb. And like pirates totally fit in my world. Like it was totally like on brand for my game, but I had no design like that was matching it. I decided to call it Dead Man's. And then like for weeks, I was just like, how can I incorporate like this like skull and crossbones on this vest? So it has to have some kind of like trigger on death or something and like make it some kind of like magical armor. Eventually I gave it a like on kill trigger. So like your next, every time you get a kill, your next attack is critical hit. And I think it like totally came out of the art rather than coming from me. So in that way, for designers who feel like stuck or like need a nudge for things, I think that designing from art can be really stoke the creative process.
That's awesome. That's such a great thing, you know, to get inspired and add more things to your game from others and not just from yourself. Like, I think that's quite unique, since you couldn't just like, you know, ask someone to produce all the artwork that you got in mind.
I spent more time looking for the concept artist than I did for some of these pieces of stock art. I interviewed like a half dozen people and like attempted to negotiate prices with them. And those things take a lot of time, like seeing if they would be a good fit and like demoing your game and like asking them if they would be interested. All of those things in artist selection take a ton of time anyway. And so I think that the fact that you save so much time by not having to do that kind of search and not having to do those kinds of negotiations. The negotiation process is much easier when they already have the art produced. You're just like, how much is it going to cost me to like get my hands on the work that you've already drawn? It's also much quicker to like utilize or modify the art than it is to go do the back and forth process of like art direction and commissioning. So ultimately, I think even though you maybe spend more time tracking down art initially, I think you save time in the long run.
You already mentioned that some of the artwork you found through someone that you follow on Patreon. Did you use any other platforms?
Yeah. So the two platforms that I started on were DeviantArt and several Facebook groups. I today would recommend that people be on Instagram, and I think ArtStation is also really excellent. But the other place that is becoming better, there are ways to search Creative Commons online, even through Google. Yep. And so you can search Creative Commons works. And as that becomes more prevalent, that's going to become much easier.
And can I just jump in real quick? Mm-hmm. When you say you approach artists, for example, on Instagram, are they making it clear that they're open to licensing, or are you just sending messages to anyone who makes great art?
Yes, totally going to answer that. So I do cold call people, and the responses has been great. I have virtually never had an artist who was, I have had artists turn me down. I've had artists say like, no, that amount of money isn't worth it because I want to sell my art for an exclusive right. Oh, because this is one thing, because I only offer non-exclusive use rights, which means the artist still owns their art fully and can resell it
for them.
Yes, I know. But they want more money. So, I mean, that person wanted more money, right?
For sure. Okay. So really tactical stuff. When you say they want more money, do you make sort of an instant offer, or do you kind of warm up the relationship first?
I absolutely warm up the relationship first.
Okay.
And so I start with, hey, I'm a game designer. I'm creating an open license game, and I really like your art, and I think it would be a good fit. Do you have, are you open to licensing some of your work? Do you have time to commission some work? And I've had lots of artists tell me, I don't have time to take commissions right now. I would be open to licensing, and we could talk about price. Or some of them have a price set and they'll throw it back to me right away. Or some of them will say, I've never even thought about licensing, but we can talk.
Okay, that sounds very clear. Now, I have one more question, and you don't have to answer this, but would you be comfortable sharing some sort of indications on what you pay for a piece of work, or how do you even value that? Is there a difference for a weapon versus a full character, for example? How do you value those things?
I'd be happy to, because the variability is insane. So you can go on DriveThruRPG right now and search stock art, and you can get a piece of art for $1. And the even good art is $5, $10. Art worthy that could be suitable even for a cover piece, you can get on DriveThru for $10, $15, $20. Lots of great, beautiful pieces. They're probably already on somebody else's RPG. So if you want it to be truly iconic, then the thing is, it's clearly been licensed before. So you may not be getting that, but you can definitely get good art that cheaply. So when I'm talking to somebody individually, I'll make them an offer higher than that, because I know that I'm their first. If I'm their first license, then I'm currently their only license. So essentially, I'm getting exclusivity at a bargain rate, even if they're going to hold full license to their own work, have the ability to resell it. I know that I'm getting some amount of exclusivity just implicitly, right?
Gotcha. So you're looking at prices on, existing stuff on DriveThruRPG, and then you're essentially offering a slight premium to that for sort of first time use.
Yeah.
But it's still within that very acceptable range.
Yes. I would say that even when I approached what I would call professional artists, like kind of artists who make hundreds of dollars for each of their pieces, 500, 600, that they have still told me that their pieces, the ones that are available for licensing, are still only $40, $50, $60. So you can get it for a tenth of the cost. My favorite artist is Sandara. She does these really gorgeous dragons. And I would love to do a whole game with her someday. She just doesn't have the time to produce a whole game in her professional serious art style. She recently did a game called Flamecraft that she's doing in a much faster watercolor style.
Cool. Is she on Instagram? Can we give her a shout out?
She's definitely on Facebook. I don't know that I follow her on Instagram, but Art of Sandara. Yeah, and she quoted me $40 for any of her simpler watercolor pieces, and $60 for her full art pieces, and if you look them up, you'll be blown away.
Amazing. Thank you.
Actually, I think we have Flamecraft as a good example of a Kickstarter campaign in one of our guides. So that's, very interesting that they got mentioned.
Yeah, she's a really, really great artist. I would love to work with her someday.
Parrish, so you did mention that, you're able to get the artwork at a tenth of the price. Is that how much you think you saved from licensing all the artwork instead of hiring an artist?
Yeah, I think that's probably a reasonable estimate. Yes.
Okay. So that's a great way, if you have a tight budget, to save money and invest in something else. So,
Sorry, can I just then clarify one more point? So you're saving money, but are you also saving time, or is the research and the back and forth about as much time as you would otherwise art direction?
Like I said, I think you're actually saving time too, because art direction is very time consuming. And so I think you can save both money and time.
Wow.
I have spent less than $1,000 on art for my game. And I think we would be looking between $5,000 and $10,000 if all of the pieces had been commissioned.
Wow. That's incredible.
I also think, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but opposed to working with just one artist, right? You can actually find artists that really excel, for example, in character design, and others for item design, right?
Yeah. So one thing that I did that I would really recommend to people is to find an artist with a large body of work and then put that artist's work just on one part of your design. And so I have, like I said, I have one artist who does all the miniatures, one artist who did all of the items, one artist who did all the magic spells. In total, we have 72 cards, so 72 pieces of art. And then like my manual has another 30, 40 pieces of art, right? Plus the cover art, which would normally cost over $1,000 by itself. So over 100 images? I think it's totally reasonable that could cost $7,000, $8,000.
Was there any art that you asked the artist to make maybe a small modification? Is that even possible?
Yeah. So in my case, since I'm already a Photoshop artist, I usually have asked the artist if I could make the modification.
Okay.
Because some artists would probably say, sure, I'll do it for free. Some artists would say, sure, I'll do it for some amount of money. And I know that some artists would say, no, I'm not going to make a modification. I don't have time. And so I'm just lucky that I have that skill.
And what do you think, some of the artists wouldn't want you to make that modification?
Yes, definitely. So that is part of the licensing, and Creative Commons offers that as well. Like, you can have Creative Commons non-derivative. And so you need to read your licenses carefully and see if modifications are allowed. There are a lot of cases where even like, I just didn't like the color of this sash in the armor, and I was like, I'm just going to change it to blue. And you couldn't do that if the license did not allow it.
But so, for example, if it's a case that you're reaching out to someone that they just have their artwork displayed on Instagram, for example, when you approach them, do you ask them specifically to license their art, but for example, to allow modifications, or you just let them tell you what they think first? Does that have an impact on the price?
I don't know if I can answer all of that question. I don't have that specific
it's okay.
I don't have that specific of an experience, Francisco. I like I said, my usual step is just approach them and talk to them about their art. Next, like, talk to them about my game, and then talk to them and see if they'd be open to licensing. I usually have already gotten pretty deep into negotiating a price by the time I say something like, hey, I like this particular piece, but I want to change this part. Could you do it, or would you let me do it? And I have had both. I have had artists just offer, be like, oh yeah, I'll take that care of that for you.
So it's definitely not an issue there.
It hasn't been for me, but I can definitely imagine artists who don't want changes made to their work with their name still on it, you know?
Fair enough. Most of the art, would you be able to use it, for example, if you do like a second edition or if you do an expansion? Would you say that the bulk of the art, you would be able to still use it, or not really?
Write it into your contract. So the contract that I wrote, the one with Christopher Love, I was very clear what exactly I can produce, how many copies of the game that I'm going to produce, and like, that I can use the, I wrote that I could use the art specifically in materials that are related to game, but I cannot use them in commercial materials that are unrelated to the game. For example, I can't put it on a t-shirt or a coffee cup. But if I was going to put it in a adventure or website or a Facebook ad, that those are all within the license. So I would be careful when, if you're an artist looking to license your work, or if you're a designer listening to this looking to get a license, I would spell it out in your contract.
Okay. And then the other question, more of a technical point of view, is when you discuss with all these artists, did you just use the Creative Commons license as like the contract or the agreement between both parties? Or did you have to draft actual agreements and both parties had to sign?
Yeah, no. So David Revoy's work is licensed under Creative Commons and my game is licensed under Creative Commons, but that is not the contract that I used for the other artists. One of them uses the contract that's on DriveThruRPG, and they additionally specify their own terms within their post, within their sales page, on specifically what they allow. And then the one that I wrote specifically, we both signed.
Okay. All right. And then is everyone going to be given credit on the, all the illustrators, everyone that produced artwork for your game, will they be credited on your, or on your box art? Oh, on
yes.
Your, sorry, the game box?
Okay, so only David Revoy is credited on the cover. So I'm only crediting my main artist on the cover, especially since he gives away his artwork for free, essentially, to any media that wants to use it. So I really wanted to feature him, but everybody else is credited in the interior. It's I'm not making a, my goal is not to hide them, but if they're not the feature artist, then they're probably not going to
exactly
be on the cover.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And then my last question is, why not just using an AI image generator?
Yeah, I saw that last question.
We have to ask.
Yeah, well, one, I think, answer is that it's not, it would have a significant negative crowd reaction. The issue with AI is very sticky right now because AI is obviously trained on real working artists whose work was used without their permission. So the idea of stealing it is very sus. But I have been playing mentally with the idea of an RPG that's set in a AI's like dreamscape. The idea that if you're interfacing with an AI as it imagines things, that you could have a setting that's like based in that reality and then use AI art. I'd also use AI to write the narratives, and I've had some luck using GPT-3 for like creating that type of work. This would be more of an art piece, so I would offer it as a very low price. I would only offer it digitally, and I would make sure to donate a portion of the profits to specifically to artist foundations, and the rest of the money would go to directly to real artists. Yeah. To fund my other game, honestly. But I think there's a lot of potential to do interesting art with AI, and I think that it's really good for prototyping. I think that game designers should use AI art when they're in the early stages. Oftentimes, it can be very difficult to produce high enough quality materials to get your Kickstarter to fund without having money. And so starting with something that's AI can come up very glossy and very realistic. And then like you can use those as examples of like the world that you want. But then like when they usually have errors, like hands look weird or like the eyes are slightly looking the wrong direction. So you'd really want a real artist to do most of your work anyway for the final. So I think it's great if you're going to like try to kickstart with all of your, without all of your art done, or whether you're, if you're trying to pitch.
That's a placeholder.
Yes. I think it's great as placeholder art.
Would it be any different if the AI gave credit to where it learned from?
I think so. But again, I would want to license it. If we could see it, then I would want to reach out to those artists and like, and pay them a licensing fee.
Yeah, makes total sense. Amazing. So you just mentioned Kickstarter. Obviously, your game is coming up on Kickstarter as well.
No, GameFound.
Yeah, I actually decided to use GameFound.
Why?
I like their commitment to games, and I found that they're very... I found them to be very helpful in promoting the project. I think Kickstarter is fairly hands-off at this point. And GameFound, being a new company, they're still very hands-on. And they really want to make sure all as many of their projects succeed as possible. And they will boost you along to get there. So from a creator perspective, I think it has advantages.
Amazing. What are some of the things? So you say they boost you. Do you mean they give you like they send traffic your way, or do they just help you build a better campaign? Like what kind of things do they do for you?
Yeah, I've seen them like promoting projects on their own. So yeah, they're generating traffic for a lot of their projects. And when I wrote them, I mean, I spoke to people who are very high up in the GameFound chain, and like they responded to my emails, answered my questions, said my project looked like a good fit for them. And I'm excited to be able to talk directly to leadership.
Yeah, that's a commonly heard issue. When I worked at Kickstarter, it was super hard. I mean, to Kickstarter's credit, at least when I worked there in 2019, there were only like four or five people on the trust and safety team, and then like some outside moderators. And I think on the outreach team, we were like, for design technology, we were like three or four people. And that makes up like 40% of projects on Kickstarter. And I think right now on games, on their team, they're like two folks, right, Fran?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's pretty crazy how understaffed they are for their size. So on your crowdfunding, so your GameFound project, what are the steps you're taking? I saw you have a landing page where people can sign up. How are you structuring your crowdfunding campaign and leading up to that?
Well, I guess I'm still deciding some of those, still working out the answers to some of those questions. Since I've been offering a version of my game digitally as pay what you want for so long, I'm a little questionable about how much I should charge for it digitally when I'm selling it on a crowdfunding campaign, because a lot of people sell their digital version of their game for $30 or $40, and I kind of still want to offer it for free or for pay whatever you want.
And so what's your framework for deciding that? Is it just asking folks what they think? Are you asking GameFound their opinion?
Yeah, I think I'm going to probably ask my existing followers. Since I have, since we've sold 1,000 digital copies on DriveThru or on DriveThruRPG, I have access to a good number of people who have already tried the game, and I could ask them like how they feel about digital versions going up in price, or whether they think that the accessibility has a lot of value and they would like want to pay for it anywhere.
Yeah, it's very nice that you're asking your existing community sort of how they feel versus just kind of going over their heads and doing a new thing. And where do you look for resources on crowdfunding? What's your main source of information?
I would say that the design groups on Reddit and Facebook. I'm on a board game, an RPG design group. On both of those platforms that are great sources, and people are really generally, you can find friendly people who will give you advice if what you're there for is to ask for advice.
Interesting. Would you mind sharing some of those groups later that we can put in the show notes? Or
sure.
Are these two groups? Okay, amazing.
No, yeah.
So we'll put those in the show notes. So then let's promote this game. Where can people go to sign up to get more information? What's your URL?
Sure. So we're on almost every social media platform at Explore Altera. And the website is probably the best location. It's explorealtera.com. We have Tumblr, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and you can see stuff in all the groups. You can download the game. You can download the digital version of the game for free, get an adventure. And it's best if you've played an RPG before, but you're looking to introduce it to somebody who has never played an RPG before.
Amazing. And do you already have a launch date?
No, I do not.
Vague one.
I'd love to do it in the next month or two.
Oh, wow. That's actually soon.
I know.
Amazing.
But I've been saying that. But I've been saying that for the last year or two.
Okay. That's a cliffhanger. All right. Still, people should go to explorealtera.com, find your social media, leave their email address, and maybe they can reach out to you as well if they have questions about the game or how you
do absolutely can.
The licensing. Amazing. Any final words or questions, Fran?
No, from my end, that's it. I've asked all the questions and
amazing.
Really appreciate your time, Parrish. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Extremely brilliant stuff. I hope that a lot of people learn from this, because I think the most inspiring thing is that you are an educator sort of by training, right? And now you're not only educating people on the game side, but by sharing this information, you're educating people on how to start their own game with way fewer financial resources. So I think you're doing the whole community a great service by sharing this. So I really want to thank you for sharing all this knowledge, because I think it's going to be of great help to a lot of people who are just starting out.
Thank you for that.
Thank you for listening to the Crowdfunding Academy podcast, Board Game Edition. If you'd like to reach out to us or have any questions, you'll find all the ways to get in touch with us in the show notes.